Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. It is solo podcast day here in a beautifully rainy, monsoony northern New Mexico. Before we dive into today's show, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button and thanking you for clicking that subscribe button. It's such a tiny gesture. It takes very little caloric expenditure. It's a matter of navigating a mouse or touching a screen, and it really means a world of difference for me. I am also inviting you to like, to share, to comment. If you're listening on an audio platform and would be so kind as to leave me a review, preferably the 5-star variety, that would also be super wonderful. And as long as I'm in the realm of asking, as long as we're in the field of me asking you for your support, if you have read any of my books, Word Up, The Language of Betterarchy, Pop Propaganda, or Yes, I Am, and found any value at all in any of these pages, would you be so kind as to navigate on over to Amazon and leave me a review? All of these things really go the distance in supporting me in expanding and thriving in this crazy 21st century online content creation world that I guess I'm playing in. So confusing. I only ever wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be an investigative journalist who brought justice to this world, and I wanted to write books and articles and essays, and life is full of twists and turns, and now I do things online. So your support in helping me thrive online is very much appreciated. I am also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we stay in touch, especially as my longer short-term goal is to get off of all of the external platforms and have everything hosted on my dannykatz.com website. There are also a few things that I am doing that I am only sharing on my newsletter, and specifically my swag line, my t-shirts, tote bags, hats, mugs, etc. All of those, they are available at my Threadless store, which is dannykatz.threadless.com. And because the user agreements have gotten so creepy on the socials, and they claim ownership of anything and everything that we share, I have become quite reticent to share my illustrations. That includes not only my product line, but also my Yes, I Am coloring book. So the only way to stay abreast of what is happening in terms of new product drops, and as well to be first to know about events, new books, new courses, new webinars, it's all through my website. So thank you for navigating over to dannykatz.com and signing up for my newsletter there. Is there anything else I want to share? I think that does it for housekeeping. Let us together buckle up and prepare to enjoy today's solo podcast. And I'm going to start off with a sip. So we're going to talk about a bunch of things today, as we generally do. And in no particular order, let's start off with going deeper on fixity. I did a solo podcast on fixity earlier this year because, at least in my mind, I can sometimes see it as one of the more opaque precepts of the language of betterarchy, which, if you haven't read or listened to, I cannot recommend highly enough. Forward by one Dr. David Martin. It features the 10 precepts of the language of hierarchy and all of the upgrades that will easily and gracefully take us into the up-level version of our current culture, which I have dubbed betterarchy. It's really a placeholder term. I'm not married to it. We'll see how it shapes up. And as I just facilitated a live language of healing webinar, which went wonderfully and gave me an opportunity to dive deeper into that particular languaging paradigm and build it out even more, I personally gleaned more insight on the downsides. I feel like that came out as downsize, but I was trying to say downsize. No, I was trying to say downsides. Wow, why is that word so challenging today? Anyway, it gave me more insight on the downsides, woohoo, of fixity. So, as relates to the language of healing, which I highly recommend if you are interested in, I definitely recommend registering for the webinar, which already took place because the recording is available now, and I'm about to re-record the whole thing as a proper course, meaning we're not going to be sharing the screen with participants and taking a break from the teachings to answer participant questions. And I think there are going to be some extra bonuses as well. And all of this means that the donation is going to go up. So, as you're interested in tapping into the language of healing paradigm, I do recommend signing up for the current webinar version so that you can get the recording at the discounted donation. I was going to say rate, but I don't think rate is a word that is appropriate for donations or any sort of conversations outside of the commercial realm. Regardless, it's going to be less dollars if you sign up now. And one of the fundamental precepts of the language of healing is to not identify with temporary symptoms, with any shifts in our mobility or our agility or how we're moving our body. The key is to describe symptoms using ing verbs that put them in motion and to use our language to stave off any urges, unconscious or deliberate, to identify with any pathologies, diagnoses, bodily lack or limitations or imbalances. Because when we identify with temporary symptoms or any of the other things that I listed, it's an invitation for said symptoms, said limitations to stick around, right? And I obviously go much deeper into this in the language of healing, and part of it rests around time and the illusion of time and how time doesn't actually work, but how we've been indoctrinated to use language to foster a fictional, linear, temporal paradigm, when in fact time is omnidirectional, simultaneous, and happening on multiple dimensions at once. But what is most relevant, and what is most relevant to not identifying and to the topic of fixity, is recognizing that this present moment is forged of all of the thoughts, words, and deeds that came before it. And what will become, right, what we call the future, is not something that exists of its own accord, that we're just like riding a conveyor belt to get to be surprised at what fate or destiny has created for us. We are all creating the future together by way of the thoughts, words, and actions that we are utilizing and enacting in this here and now. And so, with this understanding of how the future is forged, we are wise to avoid languaging limitations, pathologies, pain, dysregulation, imbalances, and dis-ease in the present moment with present moment positive languaging, because when we do that, we are seeding our futures with more of these things. So, were I to identify with something like Lyme's disease, right? Were I to say I have Lyme's disease, I am attaching fixity to this pathology that likely has been bestowed upon me by a medical professional or an internet search. And I am basically nailing it into my field. I am stapling it to my person when I say I have Lyme's disease. Because when we have something, when I take possession of something like a pen or a book, then I want to take care of it. Then I'm more aware of where I left it and who's borrowing it because it's mine, right? And if you're watching with your eyes, you're seeing me hold this to my chest. If you're listening with your ears, I'm clinging to this book like it's this extra precious thing because there's a difference between seeing a book that someone left on a bus bench. Oh, someone left a book. And finding our book that we left on the bus bench, in which case we will immediately pick it up, put it in a safe place, and add it to our collections of things. So it's not, it's sure, it's advisable when we're talking about our books and our pens and our belongings. It's not advisable when we're talking about temporary symptoms, pathologies, and diagnoses that aren't bringing joy and positive feelings to our lives. So the way we stave off fixity and the way we stave off identification is we steer clear of verbs like I have or my Lyme's disease, right? We steer clear of those personal pronouns, personal possessive pronouns. And we steer clear of the verbs that allow us to claim ownership of these temporary symptoms. Now, there are various levels to the language of healing, and we discern which sort of groupings of language are going to be most aligned for us to employ with where we are authentically at. So if I am still identified with having Lyme's, right? If it's something that has been part of my identity for a while and I've been utilizing the Lyme's diagnoses to maybe get more leeway with my partner in terms of not doing chores around the house or as a means of gathering pity or as simply a means of recognizing other people with Lyme's disease so we can commiserate or even share healing tools, right? So if I am not authentically ready to relinquish my stronghold on the Lyme's pathology, instead of claiming that I have Lyme's or it's my Lyme's, I would say I'm in the process of healing Lyme's. I'm in the process of transmuting Lyme's. I'm in the process of alchemizing Lyme's. Now, as long as we're on the transitional languaging topic, stronger, right? Less damaging for the body is to create more spaciousness between ourselves and any pathologies that we are still utilizing to describe the symptoms that we are moving through, right? And ultimately, I recommend that we steer clear of all pathologies, and we're all at different stages of development. We're all at different stages of consciousness, and we're all at different stages in our own healing journey. So for some people, it's going to be a process to relinquish the pathology or the diagnoses. So, if we're still operating in a version of the language of healing wherein we haven't yet let go of the Lyme's diagnoses, really excited for my bangs to do something different. Our wisest move is to say, I'm moving through Lyme's, I'm in the process of healing Lyme's. Now, transitional languaging gives us different choices so that we can up level and kind of purify the language according to our evolutionary process. So smarter would be to put Lyme's a few steps away from us. I'm in the process of transmuting symptoms that the Western medical paradigm likes to associate with Lyme's disease. So I added the Western medical paradigm likes to associate with. The Western medical paradigm likes to associate with. So I put eight words between the verb transmuting healing and the Lyme's. So what that does is by placing stacking all those words is it's keeping the Lyme's further and further away from me, right? Which is giving me less and less chance to cling, to identify, to draw it closer, to direct my physiology, my cells, and my subconscious mind to continue having Lyme's disease and to continue exacerbating the Lyme's symptoms. Now, ideally, when we're ready to relinquish the Lyme's diagnoses, pathology, it's going to be smarter to say, I'm in the process of healing some imbalances, right? Associated with a tick bite I received. Or we don't even need to say that. And this is like, I'm not going into a full language of healing right now, but ultimately, we're going to want to release the pathology and the diagnosis altogether and just stick with the symptoms. I'm shaking off some fatigue. I'm in the process of moving through an imbalance. I'm not really sure how Lyme's expresses. So choose your symptom. But the gist is, going back to the point of fixity, is, and I really encourage you as you're listening to this podcast to play with this with me. Notice the difference in your body, right? And you can slow down, take a few deep breaths, and just drop into your own internal feeling experience. And then noticing the difference between I have Lyme's or even I have a headache. And I'm in the process of transmuting a headache, or I'm letting go of a headache. I'm moving through a headache. I'm on the ass end of a headache. I'm relinquishing. I forgot what the other thing was that I said. Limes. I'm in the process of transmuting limes. I'm in the process of, I'm dancing with limes, right? This is another one, right? So even if we're with dancing with, right? If we're not yet at the place where we're ready to stack some transitional languaging in front of the verb and limes, and if we're definitely not in the place where we're ready to not utter limes at all and just stick with the symptoms, there's a huge difference between I have limes, right? It's mine, it's close to me. I need to safeguard it. I need to make sure that it's safe. I need to put a lock on it so no one steals it. Versus, I am dancing with limes. I'm moving through some limes. I'm transmuting limes. So notice in your own body the difference between the I have, the stagnant fixity version that verily staples the limes to our beings. And notice the difference between I'm dancing with, I am transmuting, I'm healing, I'm moving through, wherein we're placing the imbalance in motion and we're directing the subconscious mind, the cells, and the entire physiology to keep moving it out of us because we're making it clear we're not, this isn't sticking around, this isn't a permanent thing. And we're doing that by using the ing verbs that keep it in motion. Now, not only is this helpful in terms of relinquishing the symptoms, alchemizing the symptoms, moving what doctors call Lyme's out of our field? But recognizing that fixity is limiting us not just to the associations, the coding, the stories that go along with the Lyme's. But it's keeping us stuck in the Lyme's timeline, and it's keeping us stuck in the version of ourselves that manifested Lyme's 10, 20, 30 years ago anyway. And I really noticed this during the Language of Healing seminar when someone who was participating mentioned AA and mentioned the deleterious downsides of identifying as an alcoholic or an addict years and decades after we have come into right relationship with those historic addictive tendencies, right? So, say I, at one point in my life, was identifying and behaving as an alcoholic, and I had been sober for 20 years. When I identify, say I go to a meeting and I say, hi, I'm Danny, I'm an alcoholic. That fixity that is coded into that I am a blank, something from my distant past, that is tethering me to the version of Danny that I was 20 years ago, to the timelines and potentialities and opportunities that were available for me back then, and it is verily stunting any growth that I have since fostered and incurred, because the fixity that is encoded in that I am an outdated blank is pulling me back to that contracted and constricted field of possibility that I created for myself back in the day where I truly was an alcoholic. So fixity, you know, as relates to the language of betterarchy, is a tool of hierarchy. It's a tool that system uses to convince the public, fully erroneously, that the way things have been is the way that they're supposed to be, and the way that they're always going to be, and there's no point in us trying to change anything. So it's a way of limiting possibility, of placing like cages and walls around omniscopic possibility, around any, you know, every and all possibility that ever has, was, or will be. All of that is going to be completely subverted by languaging that is coded with fixity and that keeps us stuck in the timelines and the contracted fields of possibility that were available to us back when these identity constructs were actually appropriate. It is so abstract talking about fixity. So I'm trusting that that makes sense. And I'm gonna encourage you to play with this on your own by way of noting anything sucky that you might not be liking in your life. If it's like an extra few pounds around your waistline, or if it's a haircut, or if it's a behavior trait, if it's you know, a trauma response or an attachment style, right? Let's use attachment style. It's like such an easy one. So noticing the difference between either I am avoidant, which is like, we really want to steer clear of that one, because we know that I am are the most powerful words in the English language, right? They're basically a synonym for God, right? So we definitely want to steer clear of the I am avoidant, but even the I have an avoidant attachment style, notice the difference between I have an avoidant attachment style and I am in the process of transmuting an avoidant attachment style. I am healing an avoidant attachment style, but strongest, the absolute strongest, and again, this is why there are choices in this transitional languaging, because we might not be authentically ready for the very, very bestest, which is I'm in the process of mastering secure attachment style. And this is another precept of the language of healing, which is solutions speak. Speaking the solutions as a means of accelerating the transmutation and the process of arriving at those solutions, right? So I've talked about this in a million different ways, right? Like instead of being anti-racist, being pro-human, instead of being anti-war, being pro-peace. So in terms of anything in your life that is not working for you, that you could identify with by way of I am or my or I have, play with moving from the fixity that is embedded in those options and play with putting it in motion with ing verbs, right? And so there are the ing verbs that are moving us out of the negatives or the outdated versions. And that is fine in a transitional capacity if that's where we authentically are. And then play with moving into the solution speak. And so instead of giving voice to what we're not into, you know, to the symptoms that we're in the process of healing, giving voice to the up-leveled iteration of you know, whatever it is that you are in the process of transmuting. And please let me know how that's going for you. I would love to hear in the comments. Feel free to email me. And recognizing the steps in terms of authentic transmutation. I had mentioned on my last solo podcast that I had received some pushback around the language of healing from someone who was saying you can't cherry Mary Sunshine your way out of torn cartilage. And as I said then, like, no, you can't cherry Mary Sunshine it. But if you have a different perspective on it and we're being authentically honest with where we're at, we can use gradual languaging upgrades that allow us the time and the spaciousness to recognize and integrate the traumas and the wounds and the outdated belief systems that have us thinking we can't reprogram ourselves, right? So this is where transitional languaging comes in. We use the transitions while we're still rewriting the belief systems. But once those belief systems are rewritten and we're on board and our ego is on board and all of the relevant parts of us are on board with this reprogramming task, then we are resourced to move into solution speak and to completely relinquish the languaging, the invoking, the existential validating of that which is not serving us and that we are ready to release. Okay. That does it for that section. Let's have another sip, shall we? I have some propaganda stuff for us to go into. And I want to talk about the false dichotomy. And I don't know if this is something that we've gone through before, but I'm going to turn to my favorite propaganda handbook, the Illustrated Guide. Such a fun read, so fun to make, and pretty sure I did false dichotomy in this. Did I not? Yes, page 59. First, I'm going to contextualize this with what happened in the real world, and then we will break down the propaganda technique that a few days ago was breaking my heart. So, I have mentioned before some of the ridiculous happening in terms of the attempted globalist takeover of Santa Fe. And all of it has happened, or all that I've been talking about has happened under the current mayor, Alan Weber, who is not from New Mexico. He's from either Portland or Seattle. And he has a very rich public history of like socialism, defunding the police, all of that. And it's clearly a personal mission of his, at least it appears to be a personal mission of his to not only destroy Santa Fe in general, but to completely destroy Hispanic culture in Santa Fe. So, remembering that Santa Fe has a very unique history of Spanish conquistadors who have been here for hundreds and hundreds of years, Native Indians who've been here even longer. And then the white people who've moved in. And also recognizing that the beef between the conquistadors and the Indians happened many, many generations ago, and none of us were alive to participate in it. So, in light of the mayor allowing a violent Antifa mob of outsiders to tear down the obelisk in the center of the plaza, I have been working with several groups and several people on different projects and angles and strategies of getting it back. And so I'm not going to go into the details here because this is something that is in process now. So I'm containing the energy. I will tell you guys about it as soon as we triumph, which I am certain is happening. And I've been talking to people in town to get an idea of their perspectives and generate support for acknowledging that there has been anti-Hispanic discrimination. And I'm not going to bore you guys with the litany of indications around this, but what I will say is that given that the Spanish culture and the Indian culture are the most prominent, you know, the foundational cultures here in Santa Fe, this is a town that is rich with traditions from both cultures that are so beautiful. But since Mayor Weber took office, he has banned a number of the traditional Hispanic rituals that have been going on for almost 100 years, while the native rituals are totally untouched, and so the natives are allowed to practice their rituals, but the Hispanics are not allowed to practice their rituals. And then, in addition to the taking down of the statues, and like it seems very obvious. I was talking to the group with whom I am working, and they were saying like it's, I was thinking like this is a slam dunk. Like, why would anyone have an issue with restoring respect to the Hispanic community and, doing away with this type of discrimination? And these people are, they're like, yeah, I don't think you know what we're up against. Like, people are gonna have an issue with it. I'm so naive and idealistic. Cancel Claire DeLee. I am sometimes animated by naivete and idealism that has me blind to people's mind control and closed-mindedness and bigotry and nonsense. So I see this woman who's getting out of a car, and it has like the pro-Ukraine sticker and the Harris, whoever she ran with sticker, Harris Waltz, and she's got all these political stickers on the back of her car. And I'm like, all right. So I approach her and I say, excuse me, ma'am, I see that, from your car that you're very politically passionate. And I'm wondering if I could get your support in terms of rebalancing the anti-Hispanic discrimination that we're seeing here in Santa Fe. And so she asked me what kind of Hispanic discrimination, and I go through the list, and she goes, well, what about the natives? And I said, well, what about the natives? And she's like, well, what about their culture and what about their rituals? And I was like, they're wonderful. We celebrate them. Like, there's no problem with their rituals. It's just in the same way that their rituals are being honored and celebrated, we would like the Hispanic rituals to be honored and celebrated. And she's like, she actually walked away in a huff. So it took me like a couple hours to shake it off because I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this type of mind control is working on people that has them thinking that to honor the Hispanic culture here necessarily means to denigrate the Indian culture, and that the only way to honor Indian culture is to denigrate Hispanic culture. Like, it just made me so sad. And part of the reason why I was and am so certain that this plan is going to work is because it's the woke liberal narrative. And I don't say that to be like us, them, or divisive. I say this to say this is the dominant narrative that is overtaking media, that is overtaking activism, that is overtaking confused people's minds. And so my thought was like, well, if we're utilizing their languaging, anti-Hispanic discrimination, and they love protecting brown people, which I think is such a like reductive and insulting phrase, then this would be a slam dunk. But this is where the false dichotomy comes in. And it just had me so sad to see that that type of divisive mind control, which didn't even enter into Santa Fe until, I know I would say until Mayor Weber took over, and I maybe Obama, because he was, so big into the identity politics division nonsense. But it's still relatively new for a culture, a multicultural culture that has been thriving and living in peace and harmony with one another for centuries. So I thought I'd read us about the false dichotomy, which is absolutely what I'm dealing with here, so that we could be attuned and mindful and not fall prey to it. So, a false dichotomy is a specific kind of reductive oversimplification in which two diametrically opposed points of view are presented as the only options when other possibilities are available. Either you are with us or you are against us is a classic example of a false dichotomy, as is, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. False dichotomies aim to fragment the world into two oppositional categories. The specific polarity constructs are irrelevant. The goal is to force a divide, to coerce people into choosing sides and then injecting tension and ill will between them. And this is exactly what we're dealing with around the stupid drama around the obelisk and just Hispanic culture in general is that, again, I don't believe it happened in an organic way, but the idea that to celebrate Hispanic culture, regardless of if people's ancestors were conquistadors hundreds of years ago, but to celebrate the culture, part of the culture that makes Santa Fe so special, necessarily means harming the Indians is a this bullshit, fakey fake, false dichotomy, as though we can't uplift everyone and we can't celebrate everyone, which is actually the truth of the matter. So it's something that I found deeply frustrating and disturbing that we couldn't just talk simply about this one culture and the ways that it's being completely disrespected. And, you know, if the mayor and his disgusting globalist minions have its had its way erased, that can't happen. It's, you know, it's a problem with hierarchy. It's why I wrote Betterarchy in the first place, is this idea that there is a scarcity of mutual respect, that there's a scarcity of tradition honoring, that, like, well, you can't honor everyone's traditions. Someone, you gotta hate someone. That if we're gonna elevate women, we have to kick dudes to the curb. If we're going to honor Palestinian rights, we have to hate Jews. I don't even want to go there because I don't have a dog in that fight. But these false dichotomies that are just tearing and shredding at the fabric of society and, like, our humanity and how fake it all is. I'm gonna pause for a moment to see if I can find the part in Betterarchy that speaks to this directly. So pause for a moment. All right, so I don't think I've read for this section before. I know I have read False Dichotomy before, and repetition helps us learn, so I'm okay with it. And this is actually from the introduction of The Language of Betterarchy, and this is what I'm seeing happening here around this Hispanic native fakey fake divide here in Santa Fe. So it's from the introduction, the section, the hierarchy trap. Though the cries for social change were and still are loud and resonant, the change being proposed doesn't feel like progress. The shifts that folks and politicians and celebrities and corporations and organizations are demanding are all taking place inside a fundamentally rigged system that continues to go unquestioned, unchecked, and unchanged, which means that despite a handful of shallow optics, nothing is actually changing at all. According to the loud, angry voices dominating the societal landscape, the solution to our cultural clusterfuckiness and the planetary ills it is allegedly engendering is to continue to play the exact same game in the exact same way, effectively rearranging the pieces such that those who used to occupy the bottom rungs of the cultural ladder are elevated to the top, while those who used to hold pole position are shuffled to the bottom. Duly kicked to the curb, this new underclass is not just expected to surrender their jobs, status, power, and dignity. They are also to quietly accept a slew of gender-biased, racially degrading insults and affronts because, in the midst of our collective hysteria, we seem to have forgotten Gandhi's whole eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind thing. The problem with this proposed solution is that it's not actually a solution at all. Reorganizing the pieces of a broken game does not a better game make. Sure, it might seem like a win for the folks stepping into top rung positions, but given that this short-term identity group-specific win is reliant upon a great big bunch of losses by way of a newly branded underclass who is now expected to take one, okay, lots for the team, this solution is bound to create the same imbalances and resentments through which we are already sifting while continuing to erode the integrity of our social fabric and doing humanity a grave disservice. From the perspective of Betterarchy, The issue isn't a matter of which societal segments are now being shifted into pole position, or which societal segments are now being expected to take their positions at the bottom of the rung. The issue is in the privileging and unprivileging of classes in the first place. The issue is hierarchy. So this is exactly what is happening here in Santa Fe, where the Indians are being placed at the top of the hierarchy and the Hispanics are being placed at the bottom. And when we suggest, hey, why don't we just even it out and honor everyone equally? The knee-jerk, indoctrinated, false dichotomy response is, well, what about the Indians? They need to be on top. They can't be equal. They need to be better. It's so lame. And the thing is that it really truly disempowers and infantilizes not just the Hispanics, whose culture it's shitting on and trying to erase, but it disempowers and infantilizes the Indians as though they need to be protected from Hispanic culture, from Hispanic rituals, which have nothing to do with them. It's not like the rituals and traditions that this administration's have banned were like kicking Indians or insulting Indians. They didn't have anything to do with that, right? But in the same way that like women are being infantilized and disempowered by way of this like fourth wave neo-feminism that makes us seem like we can't have our own backs and we can't mind our own alcohol intake and we can't determine for ourselves who we want to kiss or not without like signing something. It's infantilizing the Indians as though their culture isn't strong enough in and of itself, which it is, let's be very clear, to withstand another culture also honoring its own traditions in parallel. And I notice this, and keep in mind, like, I do not think this is organic, and I don't think this is coming from the Indians. I think that it's coming from the whiteys, from the globalists, who love to divide. But I noticed this when I went to Lightning in a Bottle in, I think it was 2013. And I was invited to teach a workshop and I got there early. And so I was there for the opening blessing, the opening ceremony. And they had a native man whose tribe, I guess, was related to the land upon which Lightning in a Bottle was being hosted, give a talk and give a blessing. And part of it was this shtick he gave around cultural appropriation and how it was really disrespectful and it was really offensive. And he certainly hoped that he wouldn't see any of the white people in attendance appropriating the culture of the natives by way of wearing feathers, wearing shells, wearing beads. And I don't mean to be disrespectful at all because I absolutely respect all cultures and all cultural traditions, but it struck me as odd as like, I think your culture is stronger and more powerful and more badass than you're making it seem. It's like, he was making it seem as though his culture was like a whiny little weakling that couldn't withstand some like 20 something hippie girls wearing feathers in their hair. And I just thought like, you're more powerful than this. Like, why would you give your power away to some white girls who like feathers? Like, your culture is so much stronger than this. Like, don't pander to this nonsense. And so I don't find it resonant when I see, and to be clear, I, in my social circles, and I am friends with natives and Indians, they don't really care. They don't really care what traditions are being celebrated. And in fact, they're more annoyed that these traditions are being taken away and they're not offended by the obelisk or these statues, right? Like, it's not, in my experience, It's not the Indians who are offended. It's the white people who aren't from here who come here and decide that the brown people don't know better, and that they need to take their culture away from them because the brown people are too stupid to know how to handle their own culture. And I find that extremely offensive. And I wouldn't get involved in it if I didn't see it for exactly what it is, which is an excuse for authoritarians to take over and destroy Santa Fe in the same way that they destroyed my hometown of Los Angeles. And I already saw that happen. And so I don't want to go through it again. And so I'm being a little bit more outspoken. That was kind of my roundabout, elongated, false dichotomy section. Let's move on, shall we? All right, let's go into some ChatGPT stuff. I covered this briefly with Emily on our Word Salad live stream last night. So that was July 2nd. But I want to spend a little more time unpacking it because there are more pieces to it that I feel like you guys and myself are more in the propaganda conversation. So I'm just going to give you a lay of the land without playing any clips. But Joe Rogan was in the news again this past week because of his recent interview with Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders was going on and on about man-made climate change and what a problem it is. And Joe was challenging that with a different perspective and saying that, like, actually, the science isn't like fully determined on quote unquote climate change. And there are a lot of differing perspectives and different data, and that a lot of the money and groups behind the climate change, I'm just gonna call it for what it is, fiction, are actually utilizing it to push the globalist agenda and to further enslave and control the populace, although Joe didn't say it like that. And so Joe's been getting some mainstream pushback for, I'll use their disgusting shorthand, being a climate change denier, the world's stupidest moniker. The adding of the ER onto an opinion or an issue, I just find so stupid, like a lot of our culture these days. But it stood out to me because back in 2018, Joe Rogan interviewed Candace Owens, and when Candace Owens was taking the exact stance that Joe took with Bernie Sanders, Joe ripped into her and was telling her that she was irresponsible because she's an influencer and she shouldn't be sharing these opinions and she shouldn't be saying this. And he was, like, in my perspective, totally out of line in trying to censor her and tell her what she is and is not allowed to say. And he was really holding the, like, fictional climate change propaganda perspective. So I went on to ChatGPT to ask it about this flip-flopping, because curious to know if other, you know, alt media podcasters had clued into it and were commenting on it. And so I'm gonna share the screen. Oh, this is a little bit off topic, but because it popped up now, let's just do it now. Because nothing is linear, and I'm okay with that. Hope this works. Amy Sedaris shared my Yes I Am. I was absolutely thrilled. So yay for Yes I Am. And, oh, here we go. That worked. I can't believe that worked. Okay, so the first thing that AI said, because I asked about Joe Rogan flip-flops on climate change. And then it said, Joe Rogan has faced criticism for his inconsistent views on climate change, often presenting arguments that downplay human impact while referencing scientific data that suggests natural climate variability. This has led to debates with figures like Bernie Sanders, where Rogan claims the Earth is currently in a cooling period despite evidence indicating rapid temperature increases due to human activities. So I am sharing this because I had a request from a parent who was asking about my pop propaganda course for teens, and she was asking if I was specifically talking about AI, ChatGPT, and large language models. And to be perfectly honest, that is not specifically delineated in the propaganda course or the 11 modules comprising it. And what I had said to this woman is 100% of the techniques that we cover in the course can be applied to ChatGPT. And because I saw this whole thread that I'm about to share is rife with propaganda, I thought perfect opportunity to speak to this woman's very relevant request and dive into how these large languaging models are absolutely programmed to cherry pick and propagandize us. So there are so many lies in this ChatGPT response. We're gonna break them down. Joe Rogan has faced criticism for his inconsistent views on climate change, often presenting arguments that downplay human impact while referencing scientific data that suggests natural climate variability. As far as I know, that's not true. As far as I know, Joe doesn't often present arguments. As far as I understand it, this is actually the first time Joe has presented a perspective that runs counter to the established climate change fiction propping up so much of the globalist agenda. So when saying often presenting arguments, not true. And what bugs me is if this is truly an authentic, objective, large languaging model, it would know that because it would be scouring the web for objective information to know that it hasn't happened often or multiple times. So he says, this has led to debates with figures like Bernie Sanders. It would be more accurate to say this has led to a debate with Bernie Sanders, where Rogan claims the Earth is currently in a cooling period despite evidence indicating rapid temperature increase due to human activity. So this thing that it threw in, despite evidence indicating rapid temperature increases due to human activities, that is propaganda. Because there's just as much information on the web that backs up Rogan's claims that the Earth is currently in a current cooling period. So there is evidence for both. I actually don't know that there's evidence indicating rapid temperature increases, but I know that that's the established propaganda. But the fact that it chose to double down despite evidence indicating our fake climate science fictions are true, I'm paraphrasing. That is showing us that this is not objective. This is not objectively scouring the web for information on the climate conversation. This ChatGPT is programmed to sway people in a specific way, despite evidence indicating, right? So what it's doing is that does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to join me for the second half of today's episode, you can find it over on both my Locals and my Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus bonus content, plus that warm, fuzzy, ooey, gooey, do-gooder feeling that comes along with supporting me in keeping on, keeping on. Your support really does go the distance in allowing me to continue to put out this podcast. I truly would not still be doing it if it wasn't for your support. So as you are gleaning any value whatsoever, thank you for supporting me on either the Patreon, the Locals, or the both. Full lay of the land, my Words with Emily and Danny podcast is available for my $10 and higher subscribers. That is my deep scorched earth conspiracy podcast that Emily and I have been doing together for more than 8 years now. So just giving you a full lay of the land so that you can have all of the information available before you decide at which level is most aligned for you to support me. One last reminder to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com to register immediately for my Pop Propaganda Digital Media Literacy course for teens and grown-ups alike. That does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are Omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.